Chapter 13. Ullinor, Outer Gorkagrod. Sometimes the dream returns. A fantasy. A phantasm. Just one more year. One more year before Davin. What might have been? What might we have accomplished? Another year before Ullinor, perhaps. Another year in the presence of the Emperor. Another step closer to the victory he had seen. But it was false, even then. Do not tell me about falsehood. It lies in the hearts of all men and women, waiting to be nurtured by vanity and lies. But if mankind were not weak and broken, that would be even more dreadful. Though the reach of the Magos Dominus's mightiest engines stopped at the Brute Shield, they were not without impact. The nobles of the Night Houses had long sworn fealty to Mars, and on the battlefields of Ullinor they adhered to those ancient oaths through the fiercest fighting. A dozen meters tall, the ancient walkers of the Night Scions stalked the ruins of Gorkagrod, seeking the enemy wherever they could be found. Unhindered by the broken terrain, the massive night suits pushed forward where tanks could not, carving into the enemy and laying waste to the city itself. Knight's Paladin led the line, their battle cannons breaking orc mobs as easily as they crumpled the armor of tanks and transports. Chainswords several meters long were more than a match for the claws and buzzsaws of orc-heavy dreadnoughts and mega-armored nobles. With the paladins came Knight's Errant, with thermal cannons to vaporize metal and flesh, the flanks of their squadrons secured by darting forays by paired Knight's Lancer. Directional iron fields crackling under incessant barrages from orc artillery and tank guns, the towering Knights Castellan and Crusader were bastions around which the infantry of the Adeptus Mechanicus could hinge their attacks. Battle servitors and carapace-suited Skitarii flooded the ruins, a wall of red every bit as relentless as the orc waves that crashed against them. The great beast showed its cunning here also, harbouring its forces well, committing them only when needed. Where the knight strode, infantry and light vehicles attempted to speed past to strike into the rear of the advancing Cult Mechanicus. Where the knights were not, the weight of battle fortresses and super-heavy stompers, war engines a match for any imperial knight in bulk and firepower, was pressed hardest. But no amount of raw strategy could guard against the meticulous encroachment of the Martian warriors, guided by machine intelligences and the most sophisticated battle augurs. Zokuf wielded the men, servitors, tanks, automata and war engines like an overseer of a manufactory, driving them on hard but weighing every loss against potential gains, seeking efficiencies with ruthless precision. Like the gears of a machine, the Martian army continued to grind on. Sometimes the Mechanicus overpowered the orcs through sheer force of guns, machines and men. At other times, they used superior logistics to draw the greenskins into ambushes or outpace them with rapid flank attacks that cut them off from their support coming from the inner city. Block by block, street by street, the Adeptus Mechanicus took Gorkagrod until the lead echelons of Cataphron, cyborgs, and Praetorian heavy servitors were a kilometre inside the Brute Shield. Thousands of Martian veterans swarmed forward to occupy abandoned bunkers, while tech priests and magi seized and analysed what they could of the orc technology in the hopes of discerning some secret of how the Brute Shield worked or was powered. Much to the dismay of his less bellicose advisers, Zokuf left the command headquarters protected by the warlord Titans and sought to view the new front line in person. Escorted by Knight's Warden and Knight's Castigator of House Tyrannis, the Dominus sallied forth in his battle shell. Riding behind in a tracked-armored car, Laurentius and others of the inner cadre looked in awe at the devastation that had been brought to Gorkagrod. Of the city they had seen on the initial scans and vidstreams, only the inner reaches remained. The mountainside was littered with ruins and the remnants of war engines, both human and orc. Shell craters were crisscrossed by seared trenches from volcano cannons, marked by glassy bowls of plasma detonations. They were no more than 1,500 meters from the Brute Shield, which could be clearly seen as a shimmering curtain cutting across the rubble-strewn ridge ahead. Picking up urgent broad-channel transmissions from the Vanguard companies, Zhukov ordered his retinue to stop. "What is it, Dominus?" asked Sir Valak, piloting the Night Warden Red Warrior. He brought his machine to a halt astride the broken highway, its Gatling cannon and missile launcher poised to deliver a blistering fusillade at anything approaching from the city center.
"Orc counterattack! Rapid advance against our positions!"
Zhukov informed his companions, broadcasting to the Magi and pilots. To the Night Scions, he added,
"Move forward and engage." "We are tasked with your protection, Dominus,"
Sir Valak protested. Zhukov voxed back, sending a chastisement code into the system of Valak's Knight that marked the machine and pilot for censure at a future date.
"The surest way to guarantee our safety is a swift end to this mounting assault."
The Knight's pilot confirmed their orders and strode ahead, weapons at the ready. Zhukov patched his visual feeds into the data receptors of the Red Warrior, as he had done with a scout craft at the start of the planetary assault. He felt the limbs of the ancient war machine bunching and flexing as if they were his own, glorying in the sensation of power emanating from his reactor. Valak's presence was like a fly on his back, barely noticed in the midst of the war machine. Ahead, flurries of explosions lit the landscape, detonations unlike anything they had seen since landing. Coruscations of green energy flowed upwards like flames in slow motion, carrying with them avalanches of debris. It took a moment for Zhukov to adjust to the perspective of the Knight. As he did so, calculating the range to the closest detonation, he realized that some of the lumps of debris were cataphrons and battle tanks tossed into the air like the toys of a petulant child. Shapes larger than Knights bulled their way through the buildings, brushing them aside with their bulk. Small arms and heavy weapons were equally ineffective against their power fields, sparks of red against the immensity of the new war engines. Anti-tank cannons strobed las and tracers into the ruins, shredding stone and soldier with equal ease. Massive belly guns belched fire and sent tank-sized shells crashing into the waves of red-armored Skitari falling back from the assault. The great beast had finally dispatched its gargants. Zhukov immediately transmitted a withdrawal order to the beset infantry phalanx, channeling the command via the Red Warrior to boost its reach. Needing no further encouragement, robed tech priests, clanking cybernetica constructs and Martian soldiers, broke cover and flowed back down the city mountain in droves. But the gargants paid them little heed. They continued on, emerging from the brute shield to take on the assembled Knight squadrons. The fire of the macro cannons and Gatling blasters of the Knights lit the lead gargant from base to head, power fields flickering with scarlet lightning. The Orc war machines returned fire, bolts of energy and ripples of shells slamming into the gleaming iron shields of the Martian walkers. Wayward las beams and cannon strikes ripped swathes through the few buildings still standing, turning multi-story fortifications and half-broken towers into falling rubble and billowing dust clouds. Yet for all he strained the sensory array of the Night Warden and scanned back and forth across the data streams, Zhukov could find nothing that explained the extraordinary detonations and anarchy that had heralded the counterattack. The Red Warrior advanced another 100 meters, its guns targeting the failing energy defenses of the closest gargant. The Dominus spied smaller war engines rumbling and striding through the clouds of exhaust and dust that swathed the gargants. Some were tracked or wheeled battle towers, arcs of green lightning forking from their summits. With them came more gargants, amongst their rockets and guns crane-like appendages that fired crackling emerald stars. Fronds of wreathing jade flame wrapped around cataphrons and Skitari, dragging them into whirling maelstroms of devastating energy. Advancing past the gargants, which duelled with newly arrived titans, the battle towers turned their otherworldly powers upon the Knights. Against physical attacks, their ion shields provided some protection, but many were struck by phantomagorical bolts that passed straight through such defenses, turning armor inside out as though invisible hands ripped them asunder from within. Flurries of psychic energy pummeled the plates of a Knight, crushing it into the ground with repeated blows that buckled armor and bent internal struts like grass. Waves of fire rippled out from a trio of battle wagons connected to each other by sparking cables. The inferno of psychic energy licked up the legs and body of a Knight Castigator, causing the ammunition of its bolt cannon to explode in the hopper. Zhukov felt the loss of connection with the pilot as he was burned alive inside the cockpit. Together, the Gargants and psychic engines advanced again. In their wake came a flood of maddened orcs, frothing and spitting, each as large as a common orc chieftain. Huge detonations of psychic power racked the Cult Mechanicus lines, leaving blasted craters in their wake looking oddly like trails of monstrous footsteps. Faced with such a combination of brute power and insidious attack, there was nothing knights or Skitarii, tech priests or cataphrons could do, except pull back. Rune Priest Thorild sensed waves of anger emanating from the Primarch. Fully armored, expression concealed within his dragonet helm, his body language spoke of repose, but the emotions leaking through the iron will of Vulcan said otherwise. On hearing the news of the Adeptus Mechanicus setback, the Gene Father of the Salamanders had demanded a Thunderhawk and as many librarians as could be quickly mustered. The Lord Commander had argued that if the Space Marines could penetrate deeper into the inner city on another front, the Great Beast would be forced to pull back its greatest war engines and psykers to combat the threat. But such logic only triggered a rare outburst, a direct order from the Primarch, evidence of Vulcan's barely contained wrath. Cowed, Courland had assembled from the chapters to hand the small company that rode with the Primarch towards the heart of the Orc offensive. Other Space Marine forces followed to provide a more physical backup to the Librarian's otherworldly powers. Beaumont had not outright refused to join the mission, but had made it clear he wanted no part of it, claiming the need for his presence elsewhere was greater. The Space Wolf also felt the presence of the others, Gandorin and Adarian most strongly, but also lesser-ranked psykers of several chapters. The remaining survivors of the first connection with the Orcs had been charged to watch the other psychic assets of the Force to ensure no further contamination from the raging psychic power of the Orcs.
"Pardon my asking, Lord Vulcan, but I cannot help but sense you are taking this personally," said Epistolary Calvis of the Crimson Fists. "Given experience in earlier interaction with the background Orc psychic presence, is this wise?"
Vulcan did not turn his head.
"We must fight fire with fire," he said quietly.
None of the other librarians spoke, but Calvis persisted, perhaps feeling it was his duty to speak out, or simply holding a personal unease at their immediate future.
"What exactly do you intend, Lord Vulcan? It pains me to say, but we cannot match the psychic might of the Orcs. You just have to contain them long enough for me to kill them," growled the Primarch.
He straightened and looked at the assembled psychers.
"During the Great Crusade, we met many strange creatures and warp-born horrors. We knew little of psychic power and its true source, for the Emperor had chosen ignorance to be our shield against temptation. But we knew enough. That some foes cannot be beaten by bullets and blades, but with the power of the mind. In his wisdom, he did not tell us of demons and gods, of course."
Thorild shifted nervously. He knew of what the Primarch spoke. The others were similarly uncomfortable, sharing the belief that such matters, such entities, were not for casual conversation. Vulcan seemed oblivious to their unease, or uncaring of it, and continued,
"But the Emperor had a secret army to combat the threat of the psychic and the demonic. His Sisters of Silence, we called them. Anti-psychers trained as warrior maidens, one in trillions, each of them. But across the great vastness of humanity, they were number enough. What I would give for a company of the Silent Sisterhood now."
"I do not think the Sisters of Silence have survived, Lord Primarch," said Gandorin.
"We will do what we can," said Thorild, "but we risk further ruin if we dare too much, Lord Primarch. To treat too long with the powers of the Great Beast is to open ours—" "Do not speak to me of temptation and powers, rune-wielder," Vulcan said heavily.
The eyes of his helm seemed to take on a different gleam, but it had to be a trick of the Thunderhawk's lighting.
When you have looked upon the face of your brothers and seen strangers, when you have seen the entire galaxy burn for the whims of dark gods, or stood for an eternity at the breach to keep the ravening powers from destroying all that you love.
We have incoming counter-air fire, Lord Vulcan, announced the pilot. Where do you want to set down?
Get as close as you can, the Primarch replied.
He stood up and moved to the front assault ramp, head bent beneath the ceiling of the troop deck.
There will be no need to land.
The muffled thump of flak shells and the rattle of shrapnel on the hull mixed with the growl of the engines. The pilot moved the gunship in tight turns to evade the worst of the incoming fire, but Thorild felt the anxiety of his brothers even above the mounting anticipation of the Primarch.
Do all that you can to suppress their powers. That is all I ask,
Vulcan told them.
Keep close. Shield me with your thoughts.
He opened the main ramp, air screaming into the troop compartment. Thorild could see the ruined city whipping past 100 meters below. Titans and knights dueled with gargants and stompers, heavy weapons pounding out destruction, tank-sized fists and blades that could demolish buildings, smashing and slamming against each other. Skitari and greenskins ripped into each other in firefights and desperate melee across broken buildings. Flickering psychic fires spewed, and monstrous apparitions thrashed above the orc horde on the edge of vision. Almost directly below them waddled a great gargant, 30 meters tall, its huge rotund hull jutting with pylons and copper coils that crackled with green sparks. Upon its shoulders, several orc psykers were chained, absorbing the latent savagery of the greenskins around them. Thorild could feel the power churning around the machine. Even as he detected the release of psychic energy, a flare of green lightning spat from the psykers, lancing into a column of battle tanks that tried to hold back the orc offensive. Thorild could feel the wider orc psychic presence like a living thing, seething at the attack on its city, bloating and growing with rage at the human invasion.
The harder we attack, the stronger the orc psychic effect becomes, said Adarian, sensing it also.
Thorild nodded. He moved up beside Vulcan.
You knew the wolf well, my lord, he asked. We were friends, as well as brothers,
Vulcan replied.
And you trusted him, Lord Vulcan? Several times with my life and the lives of my sons. Then trust me, son of the wolf. We will not fail you.
The Primarch looked at him and nodded. A second later, he threw himself from the assault ramp. Thorild watched Vulcan fall, doom tremor trailing sparks like a comet. The Primarch had timed his jump to perfection, hitting the upper deck of the Gargant, the impact sending him crashing through the tower and through the armored plates into the depths below. A roar of instinctual protest swelled up from the orc psychic manifestation, but in the depths of the Gargant, the primal shout was quickly silenced.
Now, brothers, Thorild commanded, opening his thoughts to the other librarians. Let us show this savage and the Primarch what the Adeptus Astartes are truly capable of.
Thorild launched his spirit into the roiling green mass of the orc aura, the minds of his companions on his heels appearing in his thoughts as a snarling wolf pack. He sensed, rather than saw, Vulcan bursting out of the collapsing Gargant, already sprinting towards a battle tower just behind it. Gleaming psychic fangs shredded the green claws coalescing around the Primarch. The wolves of the Emperor howled their challenge to the great beast.